He can change his body to a higher grade, and if he likes, he can move to a lower class. Minute independence is there. The change his body undergoes depends upon him. At the time of death, the consciousness he has created will carry him on to the next type of body. If he has made his consciousness like that of a cat or dog, he is sure to change to a cat's or dog's body. And if he has fixed his consciousness on godly qualities, he will change into the form of a demigod. And if he is in Krishna consciousness, he will be transferred to Krishna Loka in the spiritual world and will associate with Krishna. It is a false claim that after the annihilation of this body, everything is finished. The individual soul is transmigrating from one body to another, and his present body and present activities are the background of his next body. One gets a different body according to karma, and he has to quit this body in due course. It is stated here that the subtle body, which carries the conception of the next body, develops another body in the next life. This process of transmigration from one body to another and struggling while in the body is called karshati, or struggle for existence. Sharira yadavapnoti yachchapyut kramatishvaraha grihit vaitani sanyati vayur gandhani vashayat. The living entity in the material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another as the air carries aromas. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. Lord Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. Because Arjuna was in a dilemma, Krishna addressed Arjuna's dilemma by giving him a whole different perspective of how to see the situation he was in, to change his consciousness, to change his way of looking at things. The vital point that Krishna made was to impress upon Arjuna that this soul is eternal and independent of the body. Now, Arjuna, it wasn't that he didn't know this. He didn't. Krishna told him, Dehi no smiñyata dehe kaumaraṁ yovanam cha tata dehantara praptihi, that the embodied soul within this body apparently goes through the states of childhood, youth, old age, and then death, which means a change of body. Now, Arjuna wasn't unaware of this. He knew that we transmigrate from body to body to body. But the implications of that, Arjuna was not fully aware. Despite knowing that, he was thinking of the various persons assembled on the battlefield in terms of his own bodily identification, my relatives, my seniors. So Krishna lifted Arjuna to a higher level of consciousness, and the importance of consciousness. Of consciousness means not just how we think, but our whole mode of thinking. Our whole perspective. So the demoniac perspective is Ishvaraham aham bhogi siddho aham balavan sukhi. I am the controller. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. So Krishna wanted to take Arjuna to a higher level of consciousness. He already explained in the 8th chapter the importance of consciousness, or the role of consciousness in determining what kind of body we get. Yang yang vapi swaram bhavam tyajanti kalivaram. Tang tam evaiti kaunteya sadatad bhava bhavita. According to the consciousness at the time of death, we get the next body. So here, Krishna is explaining this principle in more detail. Let's read the translation again. The living entity in the material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another as the air carries aromas. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. And in the next verse, Lord Krishna further explains, Shrotram chakshu sparshanam cha rasanam ghranam evacha adhishtaya manaschaya vishayanupasevate. The living entity, thus taking another gross body, obtains a certain type of ear, eye, tongue, nose and sense of touch, which are grouped about the mind. He thus enjoys a particular set of sense objects. So we get the body according to our consciousness in a previous life. This is called destiny. The question often arises that, well, if everything's destined, then it's already fixed that we have to do like this. This will happen to us, that will happen to us. So where is the question of free will? Free will is also there. To some extent, minute independence is there. We have some independence. But we are very much influenced by the consciousness that we inherit from a previous life. We get certain kinds of bodies. How does that happen, that we get various kinds of bodies according to our consciousness? That is described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Karmana daivanetrena jantur dehopapattaye. According to our activities under the direction of the Supreme Lord and his assistants, the demigods, we get, or the living entity gets, a certain kind of body. So here the stress is on karma, our activities. Here the stress is on our consciousness. The two are, of course, interlinked. So we take birth in a situation that is suitable for receiving the fruits of our previous activities, whether good or bad. Sadasadyori janmasu purushah prakriti stohi bhunkte prakriti jan guna karanam guna sangosya sadasadyori janmasu. This verse from the 13th chapter of Gita is the key to understanding much of what is described in the second or the rest of the Bhagavad Gita from that point onwards. That the living being in this material world, thinking himself an enjoyer, is stuck in the material energy and attempts to enjoy the modes of material nature. And because of this, because of his association with the modes of material nature, he gains various so-called good and bad situations. So we're placed in different bodies and we have to accept the result of that. But there's some leeway, some measure of independence is there, although we tend to be very much influenced by the consciousness that we have inherited from a previous life. According to the consciousness we have inherited from previous life and the activities that we have performed, we are placed in a suitable position so that we can continue to act in a similar role with a similar perspective. And thus we find that people or living beings who are at a similar level of consciousness are placed together. So those who are fit and desirous of that they take birth as a Gandharva. Those who are fit and desirous of that take birth in the heavenly planets. Those who are simply to be punished take place in a hellish situation. And going on in this merry-go-round of taking different bodies, one may also gain a human body on earth, which is a suitable position for God realization. We see, even on this planet, how different humans are placed in different situations, and they have a certain outlook. Now, they're placed in that situation because of the complex, it's very complex to understand, the complex accumulation of their karma and the consciousness that they have developed. Now, they're placed in such a situation, but the situation also influences them. So both things are there. In psycho or social psychology, the discussion will be there. Is our outlook, are our attitudes formed genetically? Or is our intelligence fixed genetically, or can it be developed? Or is it simply that anyone can be born in any situation, and just according to the culture around them, they'll be influenced? Certainly culture is very powerful. That's another factor. Lord Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita that Sangat Sanjayate Kamaha, our desires, our attitudes, are influenced by association. So we find that everyone is influenced by the culture that they are in. Everyone tends to be strongly influenced by that. We see, for instance, that Indians who come to the West, they often change their whole outlook. Or those who are born of Indian parents in the West, their outlook on life tends to be more like, in many ways, tends to be more what you could broadly call British, rather than what you could broadly call Indian, in many ways. Different. So culture is also a major influence. We're born into a certain culture because of certain desires and activities. And that culture again influences us to think and act in certain ways. The thinking and acting, these two factors are closely interlinked. Here, in this section of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna is speaking about how our consciousness leads us to take certain bodies. And elsewhere, as quoting Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Kapila's teachings, that it's according to our activities, our karma. Both are factors and both are linked. And even the karma, how it is to be understood and judged, that is also according to the consciousness. Just like a man who kills another, in one circumstance he may be given a medal if it's done in a battle, or in another situation he may be hanged for doing so. Just one example comes to mind about 2 years ago in LAX, Los Angeles Airport, someone started shooting. Just shoot. And then security guard shot him dead. The gunman, who was just randomly shooting. So that security staff who shot him dead was congratulated for doing so. But if he had shot him dead, or just if he had not done anything, if that man hadn't started shooting others and the security guard had shot him dead, then that security guard who was lauded as a hero would be condemned as a murderer. Same activity. But the motive for doing it gives a completely different result. And we see here in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna didn't want to fight. And according to the motives that Arjuna presented, his reasons for fighting were valid. But Krishna presented to him that although on the worldly platform his reasons for fighting might be valid, on the ultimate platform, the platform of satisfying Krishna, the platform of pure consciousness, his reasons for not fighting were invalid. So, to fight or not to fight, Krishna raised Arjuna to a different level of consciousness, that is not the ultimate question. The ultimate question is, are we doing it for Krishna's pleasure or not? If Krishna wants it, we should fight. If Krishna doesn't want it, we shouldn't fight. To fight or not fight, that is a secondary question. The first question is, what does Krishna want? So this is a matter of consciousness, and it's intimately linked with activity and how the activity is judged, whether it's perfect, activity in Krishna consciousness is perfect, or whether it's good, if it means it's done according to the principles of religion, or if it's bad, or if it's very bad. Just like we were discussing that you were telling me that in Finland it's quite common that people get drunk and kill their relatives. So, and they often get very light jail sentences because a drunkenness is considered it's considered that, well, you're drunk, you didn't really mean to do it that much. So, but if you did the same thing and you weren't drunk, then you get more prison sentence. So there are all these different factors to be considered. Lord Krishna is explaining to Arjuna in some detail here the process by which we get different bodies according to our consciousness. He's giving some details so that we can understand it better. It's a very important subject. How we are entangled in this material world. Krishna explains it in some detail because we don't see that. We don't see it. We just see different bodies moving around and we judge everything in terms of material perception. This is my friend. This is my father. This is my mother. This is my country. Welsh people are proud of the Welsh language. And then yesterday we met someone who came to our program in Coventry from Stratford-on-Avon, which is famous for Shakespeare. So, some English people are proud of Shakespeare, although hardly anyone knows what he wrote, but anyway. Something to be proud of. So, we tend to identify in terms of that, but as Krishna says, just two verses after the verse we read today, that utkramantam stitam vapi bhunjanam vagunan vitam vimura nanu pashanti pashanti jnana chakshushah. The foolish cannot understand how a living entity can quit his body, nor can they understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature, but one whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this. So Krishna is giving Arjuna the eyes of knowledge. He's teaching him how to see, not just on the superficial platform, but to see how the modes of material nature are acting, so that he can be transcendental to these modes of material nature. Otherwise, we tend to get caught up in the consciousness that's going on all around us. It's just like you. Now in the press, they're promoting. There's a fear mentality being promoted that Islam is our enemy. So everyone's getting, I don't like Islam. I'm very suspicious of that. Now, of course, this is a complex subject which I don't want to discuss too much, but we can just see how that group mentality of us versus them that is being promoted. You'd like to turn around a little bit so you don't have your backs to the deities. This us versus them. And devotees, they tend to get caught up in this also. I came to Mayapur and I saw one of our devotees. This is the time when the first George Bush, had sent the American troops to fight against Saddam's troops in Kuwait. Iraq had invaded Kuwait. So I saw one devotee from America referring, he was saying, "We smashed it." The American troops had smashed the Iraqi troops. But who smashed who? We, them? We, you identify with this, with these people who are completely in my, us versus them. This gives a materialistic outlook. So we tend to get caught up in that. We tend to be very much influenced by everything going on around us. That is why Krishna is here recommending Jnana Chakshuhu, which means Shastra Chakshuhu. Seeing through the eye of scripture, this is knowledge. Seeing as Krishna sees it, giving us the vision to see how Krishna sees it, what is reality. Otherwise we are caught up in unreality. India versus Pakistan, or football game, England versus Wales. Now here it's rugby, right? They're more into rugby. Wales versus New Zealand, something like that. So we tend to get caught up in consciousness of us versus them. But who is the us? And who is the them? We don't belong to any particular group, but we identify with that. Bhoma Idjadhi, the land in which I am born is worshipable. People feel so strongly, my country, they'll stand under the flag with the national anthem playing and feel the heart is bursting and tears are pouring from their eyes, and then they march off to war to get shot to pieces in the name of the country. Although it's actually just some politician's plan to exploit them, nationalism. People feel, I have to die for my country. It doesn't make any difference to the country. In Wales, the mountains are here. And at the moment, some people call the Welsh people are inhabiting it, because they were formerly in England, their forefathers, and then they got driven into the mountains of Wales by the Angles and Saxons. And they feel, we are Welsh. This is called Maya. Krishna, illusion. Krishna is giving us knowledge by which we can transcend that. And at the same time, Krishna is warning us that we tend to be very much, because of materialistic consciousness, because of not seeing with the eyes of knowledge, then we tend to be caught up in the way of thinking of others around us. Sangat sanjayate kamaha. Our desires develop according to the association we have. So we were just discussing this today, myself and Arjuna, or I was saying, Mama. We see how all over the world devotees are influenced by the culture that they are raised in. It's very influential. And we even see that in the matter of how people in different parts of the world take to Krishna consciousness. Generally speaking, we can say that people raised in Catholic culture are more likely to take to Krishna consciousness than those born in Protestant culture, because Protestantism, it denies any faith in sadhus, and it's more impersonal than Catholicism, less devotional. It's more on the, there's, I study the Bible and I have my direct link with God. And we see that of course these are very much generalizations, but we see that Protestant countries tend to be more impersonal also in their whole culture. It tends towards that. They don't believe, it's, of course Catholicism is a long way from pure devotional service, but at least there's the idea that we have to, in Protestantism it's just me, the Bible and Jesus, who they mistake to be God. So it's like you don't have to get the mercy of any intermediary. There's no idea of, they're against the idea of there being any intermediary. And it's against the idea of guru or even saints. There should be, it's just me and Jesus, that's all. So that's a kind of impersonalism to say. Just like there's Krishna and there's me, and to hell with the cows, and to, there's this kind of attitude. We don't like Krishna's cows, we don't like the gopis, just me and Krishna. Well, that's impersonalism, not to. So it's like that we see this Ritvik philosophy, it's more popular in Protestant countries. They can relate with that better because it's Protestantism, and they had good grounds to historically reject the Pope and the bishops, but the result of that is they actually become very puffed up, and they think, I don't need anyone to help me, the hell, you know, I can go direct to Jesus. So it's the same thing, and this Ritvikism, they may have very good, it may seem very good grounds to reject any sadhus, but it's me and Prabhupada and Krishna, and that's all. And a lot of their energy goes in. And in fact, they talk, you know, Prabhupada, they say we're going, but it's more like finding out the faults in everyone who's ever tried to serve Prabhupada, rather than trying to see that Prabhupada's mission is going on by his mercy, by Prabhupada's mercy. So culture is very influential. You were saying that's a generalization. We can say that in Catholic countries, people, they can relate to this Krishna conscious culture more easily. On the other hand, try preaching in Buddhist countries where there's, especially in the Theravada, where in Buddhism there are two main divisions which are called Theravada or Hinayana and Mahayana. So Mahayana is at least exoterically somewhat devotional. But the Hinayana, which they don't like that word, they say, they call it Theravada, or that's the original Buddhism, in which it's completely, absolutely voidism. There's no, in that Buddhism, there's no worship of any deities, or no belief in even anything resembling a functional god. So it's very, very difficult to to preach Krishna consciousness in such places, because by their culture, they're against, even not only do they not believe in God, but they're against the very idea that they're against the idea there can be any God. They're actually hardcore atheists. So it's very, very difficult. And even to speak of God, at least in Christianity, there's some concept of a supreme being. But if you're raised in a Buddhist culture, they don't have any such concept. It's very difficult to impress upon them. Whereas in a at least somewhat God-conscious culture, people can accept the idea that there is a God. And we find that all this, in the Western world, all this impersonalism, which I'm sure you're well aware of, preaching Krishna consciousness in this Baptist land, and then out you get all your neo flower power Mayavadis, who, you know, I feel I am the cosmic one, and all this kind of thing. So you'll actually find that more in the Protestant countries, where people they give more importance to their own, because it's me, I read the Bible and I understand it. So they give more importance to their own mental functions, rather than because these are broad generalizations, but in the Catholic culture there's the idea of taking a blessing from the bishop or the priest, or like that. In Orthodox Russian culture also, there's a very strong culture of belief in saints, and of course in India, which is a big jamboree of all kinds of things. But there's a general idea that sadhus, we should respect sadhus. Although it's gone completely bizarre, because mostly the sadhus, they claim to be God. And anyway, it's a mess, but at least the idea is there that there should be some respect of sadhus. But Protestantism, like Ritvikism, grew up on the rejection that there are any present-day sadhus. And Islam also, the last Messiah, Muhammadan Rasulullah. How does that go? How is that? No, I forgot. Muhammadan Rasulullah. Wa illallah. Wa illallah la illallah Muhammadan Rasulullah. That's it. There is no God but Allah, and Muhammad is his prophet, and he's the last one. It's all over. Sikhism also. The last guru is Guru Gobind Singh, and then after him, you just worship all the last gurus and the book. Ever heard anything like that? Sounds like Ritvikism, doesn't it? That's the mainstream Sikhs, although there are other Sikhs who say that, no, there are present day gurus also, but mainstream Sikhism say there's no more gurus, no one else can come, there's no more representatives of God on that level, and that's it. It's all over. It's finished. So it's a strong tendency towards impersonalism, due to what is actually this. It's actually a denial of the mercy of God, because the mercy of God comes through his devotees. It's not amorphous. It comes through his devotees. That's why we say his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. His divine grace means that he's bringing the grace. And if we think that, well, no one else can bring the grace, it stopped with him and you just have to plug into him directly, well, that's a denial that his grace is still flowing. If we say we can only go to him directly, there's no other way to go. That means that no one should preach Krishna consciousness, because if you can't extend the mercy, if you can't deliver the mercy which Prabhupada brought, then it's all over. There's no more flow of mercy. No one can help anyone else to be Krishna conscious. It's a denial of Krishna's mercy. So it ultimately comes to non-devotion. although they'll have the Bible thumping, but you can see that what they're talking about has got nothing to do with God. It's bad publicity for God. If this is not representing Him at all, and people become disgusted with that, and only fanatics who are actually, they're not at all godly. They are attracted to, and their very conception of God is of some God who's some angry person, and He'll save me. He'll only, because I am a member of the, I understand, and only me and the other three people in our church, and everyone else has to burn in hell forever. So their concept of God is actually, it's not understanding Him as He is, but it's simply an extension of their own enviousness of all other living beings. It's almost like they want everyone to burn in hell. If they're actually God conscious, they should be happy when they see the devotees chanting, but they become more angry. This is proof that they're not God conscious, because a God conscious person will recognize and appreciate others. So the culture that we are raised in tends to influence, even after taking to Krishna consciousness, we tend to be very much influenced by that. I was just saying this because I was just discussing with Arjuna, as I'm traveling around in the world and in different places, and you can see it very strongly actually, how even after taking to Krishna consciousness, we see that in some places, just like in Russia where Arjuna is from, the devotees are very much, or Bangladesh where I spent years, at least superficially, they're very much welcoming to sadhus by their culture. I was traveling around in different parts of Western Europe. I go to different temples. You can immediately understand, because they're Russian devotees in different places, you can immediately understand who the Russian devotees are and who the local devotees are, because the difference in attitude, they're very welcoming, please. Not that the local devotees are not welcoming, but by their cultural upbringing, they're a little, they're very reserved and like this. So culture is very important. That Vedic culture is especially conducive for Krishna consciousness. Within that, the Vaishnav culture, within that, Gauriya culture, this is very conducive for advancement in Krishna consciousness. By the whole outlook, by the whole attitude, it's very conducive. It can be misappropriated also, like I was saying, in India, people have the tendency to respect sadhus, and there are so many cheaters who come out and take advantage of that and cheat people. Again, that's why Protestantism came up, because they were saying, hey, wait a minute, we're going to be careful of these people. These religionists, they're all cheaters. I remember myself, I was about 16, I was at school, and one of my friends showed me some of Prabhupada's books. He said, I went into London at the weekend, I got these books, I'd like to show them to you. I said, no, I know all these Indian gurus, they're all cheaters. I was too intelligent. As Prabhupada said, that there are many cheaters doesn't mean that everyone is a cheater. But I had surmised that whatever Indians I'd seen or heard about, so-called gurus, they're all quite bogus, patently bogus. At this time, the so-called Guru Maharaji or Bal Yogeshwar was quite prominent, and he's a retired incarnation of God. He made his money and retired retired and went back to India. And there were Meher Baba was quite popular. These are all faded incarnations. And we have the present crop, the Bappas and the Babas, the Amma, and there's that some rascal from Bangalore. There was already one rascal from Bangalore, there's another one now. Prominent. Anyway, let's not pollute the atmosphere by thinking about them too much. The present crop of bogus avatars. So anyone seeing this, they might conclude that everything is bogus. So it's good to exercise some discrimination. But one shouldn't be so damn smart that he rejects everyone. But rather the tendency should, or the better tendency, is to be open to receive the mercy. We see Jara Thakur in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. It's described that he was eager to take remnants of prasadam from all devotees. He felt, I have to get the mercy of all the devotees. And it's described how, even though he was from a high caste, he went to the home of one devotee who was considered from low caste. Now, of course, in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's cult, there is no consideration of caste. And in the West, we have no idea of what is caste. But even until recently, it was a very, and still now, it's a very, not so much, it's weakened a lot, but even today in India, it's a very strong factor in, or the dominating factor in social interactions. And one major point is that one should not take the food, or one should not eat, one should not sit to eat with, or take food brought by, or served by, or given by, or touched by one of a lower caste. By doing so, you can be thrown out of your caste just for eating with someone who's of a lower caste. So, it's not Jarata, it's Kalidas. Kalidas was taking, he wanted to take the remnants of all the devotees in Bengal, so he went to the house of Jara Thakur, who was considered low caste. And he knew that, he wanted to take the remnants of his food, but he knew that Jara Thakur would never give that to him because of caste consideration. So he gave him some mangoes. He presented them to him. And then he left. But he hid himself. And when Jara Thakur had taken, he'd sucked the mangoes, then his wife wrapped up the seeds in the banana leaf and threw it in the ditch outside. Then Kalidas came sneaking out and found those mango pits and sucked them. Now, it was his vow to take the remnants of all the Vaishnavas in Bengal, whether Uttam, Madhyam or Kanishta. He thought, I want to get them, they're all chanting Hare Krishna, I want to get their mercy. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, every day when he was entering the temple of Jagannath at Puri, he would enter and just at the entrance there's the place for washing feet, and the water would come, and it was forbidden that anyone could take the water for washing his feet. But when Kalidas came, Kalidas stretched out his hand and took, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't forbid him. He took one time, two times, three times, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said enough. But he allowed it. He allowed him. He didn't allow anyone else. Because He wasn't only going to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I'll take Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's foot water. But he took all the Vaishnavas in Bengal. So only he was allowed that privilege. So this narration is given in Chaitanya Charitamrita because Vaishnav Padaduli, Vaishnav Padajal, Vaishnav Bhukta Shish, Etina Mahabha. Because these three items, the dust of the lotus feet of devotees, the water which has washed the feet of devotees, and the remnants of food which have been taken to us, these are all very powerful for giving love of Krishna. And that's a very nice culture. I've described that culture in this book, Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life, which we don't have here. But this culture is very nice to introduce that people have faith in Vaishnavas, and they, of course, they're in Bengal. It's without acharyas, without those who are giving the proper understanding, then that tends to degrade into sahajirism. That's all. That's also a factor, and then people take advantage of that, and then we get people who take advantage of that, and they become formal gurus. So that, and it all becomes a farce. So that's not good. But this Vaishnav culture, that many devotees, I felt like that myself, and many devotees who came to join us in Bangladesh, they felt that, oh, we have a taste of what it's like to be in the spiritual world, in a culture where people come and they, when you come to the village, and all the people will be waiting with conch shells blowing and like this. You see Prabhupada, so many places he went. At Chandigarh, he arrived at the airport and dozens of people there giving garlands. So putting one after the other, and then Prabhupada's servant was taking them off. Otherwise they're going to, swamp Prabhupada. So Prabhupada is naturally, it makes a very nice atmosphere. But if we think, who the hell is this guy? Then it's not pleasing. It's pleasing. It's very pleasing to have the atmosphere in which of welcoming those who are taking Krishna's message, to become very pleased. This impersonalism, Protestantism, Ritvikism, democracy, everyone's equal, it's all the same. But it may seem, and those who are from a democratic background, they consider that this is the apex of human civilization. So non-democratic countries, we have to teach them to be democratic by invading them and bombing them and killing them so that they can also learn to be democratic like us. So they're saying, well, there's corruption. There's corruption in democracy also. They also have their terrorism, killing animals. That's terrorism, isn't it? How they torture animals. It's also one form of terrorism. They think it's very bad when someone bombs people to pieces, but it's quite acceptable to torture animals on a daily basis. It's quite normal. And the reaction is coming in the terrorism. It's complex. It's karmic reaction. It's complex. So I'm not an apologist for terrorists, but I'm just saying that this puffed up attitude that our society is the best, we're so democratic, but actually the whole, in the name of progress and open-mindedness and all this, actually society is more of a mess than it's ever been. Now, I just learned a few days ago that in Britain now, the schools, they're all locked. Because the children are locked into the classroom to keep gunmen out. That's the reason. Or maybe to keep the children in, I don't know. Whatever. But what kind of a civilization is that? The children are born, they're brought up in fear. They have to be locked away. What progress is this? What kind of attitude are they imbibing? So Prabhupada, he wanted to introduce this Vaishnav culture, which is quite foreign to much of the modern world. But without that, the practice of Krishna consciousness, it tends to become somewhat dry and formal. Just like, again, this Protestantism, it's a dry, formal, again, it's a generalization. And it also has the tendency to split into group after group after group, because they don't recognize any authority, into so many different groups. And they deny that God can have his, again, this is generalization, but that he has his representatives. So the role of this, anthropologists recognize the role of culture in human society. And I practically see that as I'm traveling around, how in different parts of the world, devotees tend to be very much influenced by the culture they're born into. So the real culture is Vaikuntha culture. It's not the modern Bengali culture, or it's not Russian culture or Welsh culture or British culture, but it's Vaikuntha culture. Or even beyond that, Vrindavan culture. Actually, Vaikuntha culture and Vrindavan culture is different also. Same basics, but in Vaikuntha, the awe and reverence is more. And in Vrindavan culture, the spontaneous joy of love of Krishna, that is prominent. Here, Krishna is explaining the role of inherited consciousness. And elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, he describes the influence of association on our consciousness. And the consciousness influences our way of acting. We think it is correct to act like this. Just to give one example, in England, among men, it's considered important to be hard, right? In Britain, you should be hard. That means you can punch someone in the face, and you can, you'll go in Newcastle upon Tyne in the winter with the cold wind coming in off the North Sea, and you'll see men walking in some t-shirt like this with short sleeves, walking around just to show. You know, they're freezing cold, they must be, but they're showing, I'm very tough, I'm walking around in the cold with summer clothes on, just to show, I'm hard. So it's considered very important to be hard. But our Vaishnav culture is how to be soft, how to be soft-hearted, so that we can love Krishna. Now that doesn't mean that a devotee is a wimp or a pansy or a fairy or these various words that they use. Devotee is determined to serve Krishna and can take austerities to serve Krishna, but they're not cultivating hard-heartedness. They may be tough, in the, just like when I was traveling Sankirtan in Northern Ireland, this back in the 1970s, we often used to get woken up in the middle of the night by the army boys. What's this van doing parked here? We're sleeping in the van. So then we'd have impromptu preaching sessions in the middle of the night, and we'd tell them, yeah, you see, we're sleeping in the van, and we're monks, and we rise early in the morning, we follow this discipline. They're actually, they're quite impressed because they're disciplined people and they appreciate the discipline. So it's not that devotees are not, they're soft in the sense that they can't take any difficulties. But amidst difficulties, they don't cultivate hard-heartedness. They cultivate soft-heartedness. A devotee, his heart should be, our heart should be melting. We're not supposed to show that, because that may be a kind of advertisement for the devotee. But actually, what we're cultivating is that our heart should be melting in attraction for Krishna. So this British culture of wanting to appear very, very hard, and it's considered something very good if you can drink, like, you know, 6 pints of beer and still talk fairly coherently. So that's considered, you know, very, very manly, very macho. This is completely the opposite of Vaishnav culture. So nowadays they talk about, they used to talk about physically handicapped, now they say physically challenged. Or they say, what is that? Mentally challenged. That means, you know, you're nutcase. Or vertically challenged. That's a really funny one. It means you're short. So I some countries of the world, I think they're particularly culturally challenged. Culturally handicapped. So let us learn the, or imbibe, is again learn. You think, I have to read it in the book, okay, read this, tick. But it's imbibing. The Vaishnav culture of openness, warmth towards devotees. Again, I'm seeing, like, our devotees in the present time, they're very interested. How to learn, how to give class, and they have all these seminars on all these different seminars. But Krishna consciousness, on all these different seminars on how to relate to people, and it's all so mental. But actually, Krishna consciousness is very natural. How to give a class? You read the book. And then you sit down and you pray to Guru and Krishna, please inspire me to speak as I've heard, and you speak. And you don't need to learn different techniques. It's not necessary to do so. Actually, Prabhupada, he broke so many rules. If you go to some how to learn public speaking, Prabhupada, he generally spoke with his eyes shut, which is the number one rule. Don't do that. You're supposed to keep eye contact. Sometimes they say, why don't they look at the ladies? They should be equal to all. But in our Vaishnav culture, sannyasis are not, or any men are not supposed to look. In fact, it used to be, the system was, there'd be a screen. Until recently, that was the system. There'd be a screen so the women wouldn't be seen at all. So their ideas, we don't necessarily follow them. Prabhupada, he was the most effective public speaker in the modern age, isn't it? He changed the lives of so many people. He broke all the rules. I mean, I remember I was listening to his lectures the first month. We were listening to Prabhupada lectures, they're playing all the time. I couldn't understand what he was saying. So the accent was quite different. But and Prabhupada, his grammar was all wrong. According to strict English grammar, Prabhupada's grammar was incorrect. And in many cases, his pronunciation, just like we have the word devotee, that's not proper. The proper English pronunciation is devotee. You know that? Maybe it'll change now because we're the only ones who use that word. Or there are so many Prabhupada who say infinitesimal instead of infinitesimal. Any questions? Prabhupada used to say. He got that from his Scottish teachers, I believe. So in so many ways you could find fault, but Prabhupada, his speaking was empowered by Krishna. He was full of Krishna Shakti. So Krishna consciousness doesn't depend on any material formulas. We should be very careful of this demoniac culture. We tend to think that the way we brought up and the way we do things, that is the way to do it. But we should study from, especially from Chaitanya Charitamrita, that gives all Vaishnav culture is there in Chaitanya Charitamrita, how the devotees are dealing, how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu deals. So let us adopt this and overcome our overcome the cultural challenge and rise to Krishna consciousness. Act in a way that Krishna, by which Krishna is pleased. Imbibe the way of acting and thinking in a way that Krishna is pleased. This modern way of thinking or materialistic way of thinking, you can say it's realistic for the material world. It's actually very effective in the material world. Maybe that's why Britain and America and these countries dominate the world, because their way of thinking is very effective for the modern world. You can say it's realistic. But what realism? It's the realism of thinking this world is a place for us to enjoy. It's effective for that. And of course it only leads to misery. So because of that, they tend to be very puffed up. You see, we're dominating, we're the best, we know what's best. But actually that's only on the material platform. They don't know what's best. Actually, for the jiva. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching, chunada pisuni chena torora pisaishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadaharihi. That's a formula how to become a material failure. You want to be materially successful? Don't follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because if you become more humble than a blade of grass, people will exploit you and take advantage of you. If you simply tolerate others, then again people will exploit. Of course, in practical dealings, devotees they shouldn't allow others to exploit them in a way that their service to, or misuse them in a way that their service to Krishna is impeded. A devotee can be very strong. Hanuman was very strong. Arjuna was very strong. But just like if a devotee, his humility is that he's fully surrendered to Guru and Krishna. And Amaninam, he doesn't care that people should honor me but he likes to glorify others. And he's always chanting the name of Krishna. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself is criticized to this day by certain rascals in Bengal that he spoiled Bengal. In Orissa, they say, because of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Oriya king was very strong, and then taking to bhakti, he became sentimental and weak, and then they were overcome by the Muslims. Although actually, historically speaking, that's not true, because Prataparudra resisted. So Krishna consciousness means to adopt a different outlook. We have received a certain body and a certain mentality according to the consciousness of our previous lives, and that's reinforced by all the other persons around us, which makes us think that this way of thinking is correct. From childhood, we are raised in a way to think that certain ways of thinking and acting are correct. Just like in England, if you don't say please and thank you all the time, people think it's very impolite. Although if you do that in India, people think it's something very strange. It's a different culture. That's the culture. Very high level of cultural development. So, what is the culture of the spiritual world that devotees are to imbibe? We can't be totally negligent of the broader culture that we're living in, because if we do, just like that, in Britain, if you don't say please and thank you, people think there's something, you know, they become upset. So we should observe that. But at the same time, we should cultivate that culture which helps us to be Krishna conscious. The materialistic culture helps us to forget Krishna, helps us to be more materialistic. And the Krishna conscious culture helps us to be Krishna conscious. So let us imbibe that culture. Yeah, this is a big subject. So I'd like to have that book, Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life, too, which gives some more idea about it. Unfortunately, it's sold out. Anyway, what to do? Next time, if there isn't. So any questions about this? Hare Krishna. So many wrong ideas in Western culture. If we even say it, people become upset. If you say that, well, democracy is wrong. Freedom, is giving freedom to everyone is a very bad idea. But freedom of people, giving freedom to people with uncontrolled senses means that they indulge their uncontrolled senses to do harm to themselves and to others. Why should they be given the freedom to wander the streets and booze and fight? Better they should be controlled for their own sake. This is normal. This is normal life, right? People go in the streets and they shout and they yell. Why should people be given the freedom to spoil their human life like that? Freedom should be given to people of highly cultured consciousness. This is a misuse, but that's considered normal. And that would be considered a terrible infringement of citizens' rights to suggest that they shouldn't be allowed to wander the streets like wild animals. That their freedom to wander the streets like wild animals, that means that any decent citizen, they don't have the freedom to move on the streets without fear. Yeah, any question or comment about this?
What about for a preaching devotee? Mentality should be, especially distributing books, devotees come across lots of different people from different cultures and so-called different religions or followings or faiths.
When we're distributing books, we don't try to change people on the spot. We try to give them books. That's the bottom line. So we don't, you know, walk up to them and say, "My dear sir, you're totally in Maya. Immediately change your whole way. Immediately change your whole way of thinking." Preaching means jibeh biparit ruchi paribartan kara, to change the back to front taste or desires of the conditioned soul. That's preaching. But it doesn't, it's not like turning a switch. It's not so easy. Yeah.
I would just like to ask if You know, the date Prabhupada first stepped onto the sort of English soil, as we call it, I think it was September the 11th, which is today.
How is it today? The famous September the 11th. Few people got killed in America.
Yeah, that as well.
The same day so many cows got killed, more cows got killed in America on 9/11. Every day they kill more cows than were killed in the, what is it, the Twin Towers? Was it September 11th? I don't know.
Yeah, I heard it was September 11th.
Yeah, it might be, but I wouldn't read too much into it.
I know, it's diametrically opposed.
It's a more important September the 11th, that's for sure.
Well, today is September the 11th.
Is it? Yeah.
So it's like an anniversary when you first stepped onto good. The soil.
Jai, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Why have you come here? To teach what you have forgotten, God. Prabhupada immediately took a aggressive attitude. Anything else?
You put some books behind
you? Yeah. All right. Well, how are we doing for time here? We said we're going to finish at 8:30. So why don't we chant Hare Krishna for a few minutes more? And then if you want, you can talk about the books. So we're right on time.
Before we chant more,
on time. That's something quite good in Western culture. We're not saying everything's bad. It's quite good also. It's has its usefulness.
I'd just like to thank you, Maharaj, for coming on behalf.
Well, thank you for being here. If you weren't here, then it wouldn't be, you know, if I had to go and round up some people from the street to speak to, it'd be a more difficult job. I probably wouldn't have come at all. So you're all just like Paramahamsas, transcendental swans. The swan takes the topmost devotee is called Paramahamsa, like a swan that takes the milk from a mixture of milk and water. So you're all swans in Swansea. And I've come to get some of that nectar from you.